A computer genius with no background in computers. A villain who wants to control the world's coffee. And a Superman sex scene. We saw Superman 3, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Can't you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, welcome to the first live episode of How Did This Get Made at Largo. We are super excited to be here tonight. Joining me, as always, my two amazing co-hosts. Please welcome Jason Manzoukas. Welcome, Jason.
How are you, Paul? How are you, audience?
And, of course, the lovely June Diane Raphael. Please welcome her to the stage. How are you, June?
Good. How are you, Paul?
Very good. Now, the whole reason why this episode came about was because I was following Twitter one day, and I saw this person's tweets about this movie, and I thought this would be a perfect movie for our podcast. You may know our next guest, besides the Superman tweets, from being behind some of the coolest things that have been around lately. From Lost to Star Trek, please welcome Damon Lindelof.
There you go. Have a seat.
All right. Welcome, everybody.
It's all happening.
Everybody's taking their microphones out.
It's so cool to hold a microphone in your hands. Much better than just talking to it on the stand.
It is, unless you're going to play an instrument.
As the night goes on, narrate the physical events that we're doing.
That's really good.
For the people on the podcast so they know what's up.
I think that's a really, that's an important thing to happen.
How's that water you're drinking, Paul?
Good. People here, they see it, so they
They're like, that guy's drinking water, but the people at home are like, what's happening? Paul's not
talking.
No, what's
happening? Why does my voice sound refreshed? Guys, let's talk about this movie. First of all, it's a kid's movie, right? We can agree that it's a kid's movie.
I don't think so. It has a very graphic sex scene in it.
Yeah, where is this sex scene you speak
of? I thought it was a kid's movie until Superman got a blowjob on the Statue of Liberty.
There is some sex in this movie, it's a kid's movie, and it opens with a guy on an unemployment line smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
Like, smoking in this movie.
And being denied benefits. He is brutally told, you do not qualify for unemployment, go starve to death.
He's been on it for 36 weeks, and this is where again, a Superman movie where we don't start with Superman. Start with Richard Pryor.
This is the pre-credit sequence, so they want to amp us all up. This is where you see the birth of a bad guy. So after he's denied his unemployment, he puts a cigarette in his mouth and he says, "Hey brother, you got a light?" And a guy gives him a pack of matches. He looks at the matches, and on the matches it says, "Do you want a job in computer programming?" And the camera starts to kind of push in on Richard Pryor, and we're supposed to think, "Oh my God, if Richard Pryor gets behind a fucking computer." Superman is in big trouble. He is totally screwed. And then the music rises and we're into the credits.
And the credits are
You could spend this whole
crazy.
Podcast talking about the opening credits.
I could talk about simply the opening credits and the Superman sex scene. And as far as I'm concerned, the rest of the movie is irrelevant except for the sister becoming a robot, which is
best thing
which
I've
is
ever seen.
Right about the point where I came.
Right, let's talk. These opening credits, first of all, as I'm not a director, but if I was, I would tell you that it would not blur the lower third of everything that goes on. The entire bottom third is blurred, which is where the credits are running. And this kind of crazy, how would you describe this opening?
I mean, this opening says to me, people are retarded.
I almost feel like it's like they were like, we want to do an opening that's kind of like a Rube Goldberg machine with human beings being put into harm's way. And Superman's there? Nope, he's not there.
He's not! He is not!
Not for a long time.
Because we've already had the Richard Pryor part, so we should have Superman here. No, 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 we shouldn't. We should have a Star Wars-style crawl of credits. We should have a busty blonde. We should have telephone booths that get knocked over. And Superman's in one? No, 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 he's not.
Basically, the
Jimmy Olsen is there.
Yes, he's getting a hot dog.
Right.
Jimmy Olsen gets a hot dog. He's really people's favorite Superman character.
I want to focus on the blind guy in that credit sequence.
Oh, yes. My God. Amazing. Amazing performance.
The blind guy who grabs a paint roller, thinking it's his cane, and just starts walking with it.
Well, also, let's just point out this. A bank robbery happens. There's an armed gunman shooting into the crowd.
Does Superman show up?
No.
Wait, what?
Not then.
Superman does not show up for a long time
in
this
opening. You know he heard the gunshots. And so that means he's fucking ignoring it.
Which brings me to my go-go.
There is a small flaming penguin toy.
Oh, yes. That,
oh, my that, God. Oh, yes.
And by the way, this is our first shot of Clark is basically kind of coming around a corner and experiencing this small flaming penguin toy, which he blows out. So he is concerned.
But he blows it out in such a way, it's almost like, wow, look at that feet of Superman. It's like a one-foot toy that's on fire mildly. And he's like, it's like, come on.
It's basically like an old like 40s style musical number without really like because it's so choreographed, like all of these kind of things happening at once, but without any singing or dancing or any expertise of execution.
Well, I have a scene that was actually deleted.
Paul is
from
standing right now. For those of you listening at home, Paul has left his seat and is walking over to the computer. He's now pushing a button and something's going to happen visually.
This is a deleted scene that will only really play to the live audience, but you have to see it because the fact that it was cut out is amazing.
I'm really going to want to describe the entirety of this to the audience at home.
There you go, honey. You okay?
Kid on a...
You ready for a teeter-totter ride? Hang on real tight, okay? Just hang on real tight.
Oh, boy. What? Guys,
notice, as someone pointed out to me, the ass grab. He grabbed...
Guys, can we agree? Let's all make a pact to not describe what we just saw to the home audience. This is just for us.
My true dream is to imagine what it was like in the editing room when the Sal Kinds and Richard Lester basically looked at that scene and said, you know what, this one doesn't fit.
Well, they were like,
this is just ridiculous.
They're like, well, the opening.
I mean, a cat in a tree, yes, but this, no.
The 13 minute opening sequence is just about 11 seconds too long.
And by the way, we don't want Superman in the movie.
No,
you know, this is like he does two things in the opening.
Are we worried that we're going to reveal? We're going to reveal
Superman. Superman's first save is the strangest thing I've ever seen.
A person hits a fire hydrant, and the water starts filling up the car, and the guy is drowning in his own car.
Yeah.
And
he can't get out of his windows or doors, which I get, but he has a sunroof that he does not open.
Nope.
That Superman comes along and opens and drags the guy out.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, by the way, if you were at home and you didn't see it, a baby was catapulted into a tree from a teeter-totter. That's what led us this.
I'm really sorry,
in the opening,
that Paul took away the unique thing from us.
In the opening, pies in the face, blind guys, mimes, flaming penguins, paint buckets and rollerbladers. Those are all things that happen in the 13 minutes.
Oh, and telephone booths being knocked over dominoes style.
Superman getting in a photo booth, changing, and the picture gets taken of him changing.
Yep.
And a kid's like, oh, can I keep it? And he looks down until it's safe because some of them have Clark Kent.
I would like to point out that the scene that you just described in the photo booth is happening while the aforementioned gentleman is drowning in his car.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes. He takes a break. He does take a break.
Here you go, Jimmy.
The stakes of that drowning are so low.
Right.
There's also a point where the hot dog cart that Jimmy Olsen is at gets hit and knocked into the street, is rolling away, and Jimmy Olsen is like, hey, yeah, I still want mustard. And the guy pours mustard on his hot dog.
That's set up for the big mustard on your lapel gag that comes later. Yeah.
Which is true. That's not a joke.
Classic.
No, that callback.
That's like a catchphrase. You've got mustard on your lapel. We all say that all the time. It's just like yippee-ki-yay motherfucker, right? It is the line
from
this movie.
It is the line from Superman. So basically, if you don't know what happened between the second movie and the third movie, Richard Donner directed pretty much the first and second half of the movie, because then Richard Lester came in, and Richard Lester directed Hard Day's Night, The Three Musketeers, and he brought an overly comical style to it. And Superman 2 is still straightforward, but there's some overly comic moments, and that's Richard Lester. This movie, Richard Lester got to do whatever he wanted. And to much of the chagrin of the cast members, considering Lois Lane and Margot Kidder said, "I don't want to be in it because you fired Richard Donner." And they said, "Okay, fine, you have two lines in it." And they put her in the movie for two lines. Oh, yeah.
She leaves the office, the Daily Planet, and says, "I'm going on a vacation," and pulls a pink bikini out of her suitcase to tell us she's going on a vacation.
Not even a suitcase.
No, I'm sorry, a briefcase.
Yeah.
She's just carrying that in case she ever needs a change to do a bikini. Okay, so basically the whole premise of the movie is Richard Pryor becomes a computer genius for no reason.
No. He doesn't become a computer genius. He is a computer genius. He doesn't know it until he's seated in front of a computer.
I take offense to that, because here's what happens. When he's in front of that computer, the computer teacher goes, "How did you do that?" And he goes, "I don't know."
And then
that's the only justification of his computer skills for the rest of the movie.
He had it all along, Paul. He had it all along.
And one of the amazing things about this movie is the way that it chronologically works. So the scene that you just described basically happens, you know, two scenes into the movie, and then we see...
Which, Richard, by the way, is 25 minutes into the movie.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because one of those scenes is a 15-minute opening title sequence.
It is the longest 2-hour and 5-minute movie that I've ever seen. It's sort of like... It's the Schrodinger's cat of movies. It just sucks you in. But... So there's that scene where he takes his first computer class, which is right after he gets the matchbook. He's already taking his first class. And then we see him again 5 minutes later in the movie, 5 minutes later for Clark.
Yeah.
And now he's got his first job. And on his first day at his first job, he's receiving his first paycheck.
Yes.
Right. The first day. And then
Superman goes out and puts out a fire, and now he's receiving his second and third paycheck.
Which he has now, in the meantime, discovered a way to fleece the company, which is the same scheme as the movie Office Space, right?
Yes. Which is, they based it on Superman 3. That was like an homage to Superman 3.
It must have been, right? Okay, it must be, that blew my mind.
They reference, in Office Space, Michael Bolton basically says, like Superman 3.
Okay, good. Yeah. I want to make sure of that, because I freaked out.
First of all, Richard Pryor's character does not understand the idea of taxes. Because when he gets his first check, he's like, "What? They took money out of my check?" And his scheme is, he finds out from a coworker who has way too much information that most corporations have these half pennies that they can't put in a check. So he collects all the half pennies and gets the check for $82,000.
We could do 4 hours of this. This podcast could go on forever.
So he, on his second day of work, on his second and third paycheck, he's fleeced the company for $82,000.
One of my favorite parts.
And is hoping that no one catches on.
Yeah.
Right.
One of my favorite parts was that he's like, they're like, "Okay, we're going home, man." And there's two women who are both putting on identical pair of Nike sneakers. Like the weirdest kind of weird, like, moment of like, what is going on? They just are like.
Working girls, man.
Nike girls. Sneakers are new.
Now, in the meantime, Clark is going back home to Smallville for his high school reunion, which is a very big deal. And he asks Jimmy Olsen, "Have you gone back to your high school reunion?" And Jimmy Olsen replies, "No, all the people I went to high school with are still in high school." Not true! Jimmy Olsen was 28 when they made this movie. He is not a young man by any stretch of the imagination.
But I think in the comic he's supposed to be, so they were like, "Well, let's just say he is."
He looks as old as that.
This actor is an old person.
So Clark goes home to his high school reunion, where
there's a section in here where he puts out a chemical fire.
Yes.
Where, like, he puts out a chemical fire, Robert Vaughn is introduced as like the bad guy, millionaire person, and all of these sequences happened that I was like, oh, this section of this movie is just a Simpsons episode. It is a disaster at the nuclear power plant. Robert Vaughn is Mr. Burns. Then they cut to like a bar scene where it's basically Moe's. And I'm like, everything here, this entire section is just The Simpsons.
And in this analysis, how can we not discuss how Superman puts out the chemical fire?
Oh my God.
Go, please, please. Please tell us.
There's a lot to unpack there.
There are chemicals there.
First off, he's rescuing people flying down, and then, you know, as this will happen, the fire trucks run out of water.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Look.
The fire chief's like, I thought we had enough water.
The fireman
yells at them. The fire chief
says,
so
we need water.
Right. And then one of the other firemen says, we don't have a hose long enough to reach the lake. And Superman goes, where's this lake? That way.
And they're like, it's 5 miles that way, which also means, like, did the guy think there is a hose that's 5 miles long, but we didn't bring it?
Right.
Fuck, we forgot the 5 mile hose?
I also like, I just want to talk about these firemen too. Like, Superman lands, and he's like, what can I do to help? And the guy's like, get this guy a helmet. Oh, Superman. Okay, no, you don't need
a
helmet.
Totally okay, unfazed. Totally unfazed that Superman has shown up to a chemical fire.
And he just knows he doesn't need a helmet.
This is one of the great things about Superman, and this is a recurring theme in this movie, even when, spoiler alert, when he turns evil. But when he arrives at the scene of an accident, he always finds the guy in charge.
Yep.
And lands beside him and says, what can I do to help?
Yeah.
You know, you're fucking Superman.
That's
like,
one of his,
yeah. You don't need this guy
to
tell
charge.
You.
You take charge.
Yeah,
exactly.
How about you take charge, guy?
So, you tell me what to do.
Yeah, Superman lands. I go, Superman, what should we do to help?
You got this?
Yeah, right.
And he's like, explain the situation to me. Why? There's a fire.
Put it out.
Right there. Don't waste time. Blow on it, dum-dum.
And there's a lot of explaining, because he then runs into a room and there's a scientist just standing there looking through the glass.
By the way.
And there's all these sort of vials of acid, and Superman's like, what's going on in here? And the guy's like, oh, right now everything's cool, Superman, everything's cool. But if the fire gets too close to this room, see this needle over here? If this gets into the red, acid cloud, eats through Metropolis, really bad news. So Superman's like, I'll be right back. And so this scene sort of like happens in the midst of...
goes into this guy's like, I have to stay here with my acid. And and then Superman flies to the 5 miles, and you...
We know that is set up for how Superman will...
That's going to come back. Yeah, that's going to come back.
Exactly.
Just remember, those chemicals are volatile.
Yeah.
They will eat through anything, those chemicals. He flies to the lake... And what do you think he does? Blows on it, freezes the top level of it, then lifts up the top level, and then flies it back. And then as he gets over the chemical fire, it starts to crackle, and then rain, and then the fire's out.
And
it
everybody
didn't seem
goes,
like that much water.
No!
The water would have evaporated. The water would evaporate when it hit the fire.
But when he brought it over, it was like a rainstorm of epic proportions.
And everybody goes, water!
Is this where we're drawing our logic line?
This is what I checked out. This is when I checked out of this movie.
Absolutely.
Up until this point, everything was
possible. Just wanted to make sure that's where it was.
So he goes to his high school reunion. He is hanging out with Lana Lang, his old high school love. There's a shot here. I don't know. I should have pulled it, but I didn't. There's a DJ there, and I don't know if you guys recognize this, but there's an odd shot. It's very Sandusky-esque, I guess. Right at the kid's crotch. And it, like, he's DJing, and the camera just pans down to this hole in the DJ booth where you just look at this kid's crotch for 5 seconds. It's not long, but it's odd.
There's a couple.
5 seconds is long.
Yeah, I guess it is long.
There's a couple of like real cock shots in this movie.
Yeah. The other one
is on the Statue of Liberty when he walks up to her and she's like,
his cock is right. It's right there.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. So, Lang.
Okay, we got. That's good. All right.
That's only for the live audience.
Lana Lang is telling Clark, this is the next day, Lana Lang's telling Clark her sad sob story about how she had to pawn her diamond ring, her engagement ring. And then Clark just starts playing the piano.
But we also, the night of the prom, the night of the dance,
oh, yeah.
where, you know, at high school reunions, you'll wear your white tuxedos.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Of course.
Everyone's in white tuxedos.
Why wouldn't you?
Sure. I mean, if they're going to have it at the high school gym,
everyone's in white formal wear.
Because the Smallville class reunion is black tie.
But we meet Brad.
Yes.
Who is Lana's ex-husband.
It's just a guy that is in town.
Yeah, she's
her ex-husband's not even around.
His presence is very strange because they all grew up together. Brad was the high school jock. He remembers Clark and doesn't have great affection for him.
Right. He, of course, he's the bully. He's like, yeah, you were the water boy, and he was the star football player.
So the father of Lana's ex-husband is just gone.
He's out of the picture.
Is he dead?
Don't worry about it.
She explains it to him. I think he may have left them.
She explains it poorly.
Right.
Yes.
Because I also thought for a long time that he was the father, and that wasn't the case.
He seems to be the only single guy left in town, and he wants to date Lana. And she's like, oh, that guy, he's the worst. He's an alcoholic,
which he is, the first basic drunk rapist in this movie. Superman being the second.
Yes. I would be...
This is a pretty aggressive character to have in this movie, this guy. And then little did I know, basically an omnipotent alien would get drunk and try and rape everybody later in the movie.
In Brad's defense, Superman's first attempted rape, he's completely sober.
Yes, that's true.
So they meet this character of Brad, who also figures in prominently because now that Richard Pryor is working... Oh, God. He's working for Robert Vaughn.
We forgot the scene. The scene that I was obsessed with was Richard Pryor is busted for stealing.
Yes.
He's called into Robert Vaughn's office, and they have a 1.5-minute conversation about Robert Vaughn's socks and what happens to them when he's done wearing them.
Yeah.
Which I was like, are they still going to talk about these socks? And he's like, maybe they get turned into rags. I don't know. Or maybe they get turned into... And Richard Pryor goes, other socks?
And Robert Vaughn goes...
What am I watching?
I never thought of that.
Yes. And I was like, this was all scripted. Somebody wrote all of this down. These people memorized it and were like, that's appropriate dialogue.
You get the sense that Robert Vaughn is a powerful man because he leads off by going, I'm the type of man who doesn't wear the same socks twice.
Watch this movie and just picture Robert Vaughn as Mr. Burns every time.
And then Richard Pryor asked the question that we'd all ask.
Yeah.
What do you do with the socks? To which Robert Vaughn I give them to charity. This is actual dialogue from the movie.
Oh yeah.
Amazing.
And then basically he says to Richard Pryor, you're really good at computers. I need you to start controlling the weather because the person who controls the world's coffee wins. Yeah. And he wants to punish Cuba because Cuba's not playing ball.
That's Colombia.
Oh, sorry, Colombia, yes. Okay. Colombia, yes.
Yes.
So Richard Pryor gets
on... Don't be ridiculous.
Richard Pryor gets on a computer, tip, tip, tap, 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 and instantaneously, even though it's night where Richard Pryor is, like, the world is thrown into abject chaos.
Well, first of all, Richard Pryor can't use the computers in Metropolis. They got to send him where? To Smallville. Go hack a computer system where who works? Brad.
Oh, Jesus.
By the way, how did he know that Brad was an alcoholic? Because Richard Pryor shows up where Brad's working with a suitcase full of liquor.
What's more interesting is that he didn't know that Brad is an alcoholic.
Right.
It just happens to walk around with a suitcase full of liquor.
Now, and I love that he gets Brad drunk and then is himself shit-faced.
Wearing a giant oversized cowboy hat.
And now I'm going to show you. Now this is Richard Pryor drunk controlling what the computers do. So have a look here. Here we go. But you remember the classic Superman score. This computer controls Bloomingdale's.
Immediately, he's at night making this happen. It's day here. This check has already arrived.
This is my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh,
guy.
Our friends are on a cruise. Woman. Yeah, boy. What's her? Have you been racking up any bills?
So he gets a bill for $176,000
instantly,
and then squeezes a grapefruit in his wife's face.
The old grapefruit in the face.
And by the way, she's kind of like, I
deserve it.
I had this coming.
Meanwhile, he's still working at the computer. Meanwhile, this is happening during the day. So
this computer controls Bloomingdale's billing, city traffic. It's like the computer from Die Hard 4. And now there's a huge gridlock.
There's a riot, basically. Uh-oh.
But now the walk signal walks into the don't walk signal, and they have a fist fight.
Now he's raping him. The walk signal is raping the don't walk signal.
Oh, he messed up again. Oh, computers.
Brother. Computers, guys.
By the way, I think it's worth mentioning that in order to access this mainframe in Smallville, that there is a security system under which Gus must sort of insert two keys simultaneously, but they're out of reach from each other because, you know, it's like a missile silo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because this computer terminal is that important.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the middle of Smallville. It was for a wheat manufacturing plant. And then he has to tie up the drunken Brad and maneuver him like a puppet to shoot the card keys in.
This scene is, I don't know, 30 minutes long.
Yes.
There are sections of this movie that you're like, the central piece of storytelling would have taken you 1 minute to execute. It has now been going on for 8 minutes.
Also, I will say, Superman playing a very, like, a backstage, but like he's, very
this
much
movie
a supporting
is not about
character.
Superman.
Yeah, no.
For
the first hour and 15 minutes of this movie, you can make a very convincing case that Richard Pryor was not aware that he was in a Superman film.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sort of like Bowfinger.
Yeah.
Richard, this is actually a Superman movie.
I don't think so. Superman hasn't been in any of the scenes I've been in. I haven't said the word Superman. I haven't heard anybody say the word Superman. I had a 4-minute conversation about socks, and then I did computer shit.
An interesting thing to note, the original script was created for the character Brainiac.
And Mr. Mitzelplick.
And then they were like, we can't have those characters. Let's put Richard Pryor in. And I think they didn't change the Brainiac part because clearly Richard Pryor is supposed to be Brainiac. Because he controls everything. But that's just a side note. I don't know how funny it is. It's just interesting for you.
When are we going to get to Richard Pryor skiing off of a rooftop?
Oh. Well, okay. So
It's coming.
It's coming real
soon. He controls the world's weather. He causes a major tornado in Colombia. He wrecks the coffee crops, but then Superman comes, saves the coffee crops.
We can assume that tons of people were killed in Colombia, right?
Oh, like in the hundreds. Right. The storm that we saw was blowing away.
Was terrifying.
Huts. Yeah.
But I would point out that we're not really supposed to care about the native Colombians. We're supposed to care about the two winners of the Daily Planet lottery giveaway.
Yes.
Because they're like the
Eagle
Block.
How can we forget about these guys?
Are they coincidentally in Colombia?
They won a trip to South America.
Holy cow.
So this very unlucky couple in the beginning of the movie wins this trip, and then they are in.
How do we know they're unlucky? They're obese.
Yes.
They are standing in the doorway of a church when this natural disaster strikes, and there are literally pieces of the church crushing.
Yes. On a wedding. Someone's wedding.
They're crushing the bride, the groom, the priest, and there's zero reaction from these people.
Because the obese Americans are like, they didn't tell us it was the rainy season.
They were mad.
Yes. We will watch natives die.
They said natives. I thought that was weird that they said natives. It just made them see they were in suits. They were getting married. They were a respectable Colombian family. They were not called natives. It felt racist to me.
No. That's the only thing that felt racist.
No, not the only. Yeah. Not the only. One of many.
Right.
So they now the coffee.
How do we know that Superman saved Colombia?
you can talk about this.
Okay, so we see that Columbia is like in the midst of absolute destruction, and we cut to Robert Vaughn and his evil sister and his dumb girlfriend skiing on the rooftop of their skyscraper.
We're
Metropolis.
Only meant to believe that she's dumb, though. There's a huge twist coming.
But is there a twist? Because I didn't get it.
She's like, smart.
She's reading Kant and like she knows about
it
computers.
Pay off, I kept thinking at all.
She was going to become a bad guy or something, and she was just secretly smart. Fuck you. So they're there and they're celebrating. They're like, yeah, we got them. We control the coffee. There's no stopping us now. And then they're like, if we can control the coffee, we can control the oil. And then Richard Pryor comes in and is like, didn't you guys see it on TV? And they're like, what? Columbia. They're like, what? And he's, Superman saved it.
They turn off the TV to let him explain this. Again, 8-minute sequence. Yeah.
He ties a tablecloth around his neck, and he describes everything that Superman did to save Columbia.
And you're only seeing quick snapshots of it, like they didn't shoot the whole sequence. They just
like it was too expensive to shoot.
Yeah.
So they're like, we'll have Richard just describe it all.
Which, by the way, I found out this sequence was Richard Pryor was on the Johnny Carson show explaining watching Superman 1. And the Salkinds were like, oh, he should be in Superman because he acted it out really good. So they just wrote him to do his Johnny Carson bit in this movie.
What?
Wow.
So if you look Richard Pryor on Johnny Carson, he has done this years before. And they're like, oh, yeah, let's put this in the movie now.
Yeah. And so he goes through and he describes all of the stuff that Superman did he took a volcano and he turned it upside down. And like all this kind of crazy nonsense. Oh. Meanwhile, he's then talking to himself, and he's going, it's not my fault, it's not my fault, boop, 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 it's not my fault. Clicks into a pair of skis, is wearing a Superman tablecloth, skis off of the skyscraper.
Falls down hundreds of stories.
He basically skis off the World Trade Center.
Yep.
Too soon. And,
never forget.
And lands on his feet.
Lands on his feet, agile like a cat, not even bruised.
And then looks around like,
and walks across the street.
Because their only safety guard on the skyscraper ski mountain is a tiny wooden fence about this tall. It just goes right through it.
Oh. So
lands on his feet.
Like a cat. So now, obviously, the problem, and just to put it in perspective, the first movie, Lex Luthor wanted to break off California from the United States. Second movie, three of the strongest supervillains from the planet of Krypton came to fight Superman. This one, the villain wants to control coffee. So it really
the price of coffee.
Right. So they go, oh, Superman's a problem. We got to figure out how to defeat Superman. Let's defeat him by getting some kryptonite. They can't figure out what kryptonite works. So, yes.
But the way that this entire conversation transpires, though, I have a very, very fresh memory of, which is they're sort of like, isn't there something that hurts Superman?
Oh, yeah.
And then I believe Robert Vaughn or his sister says, oh, yes, kryptonite. I remember hearing him talk about it in an interview I read.
Because if Robert Vaughn says it. He says, yeah, I read that in an interview.
He gave, right, Superman. So it's okay. Sort of like, Superman, is there anything that kills you?
Well, my greatest weakness is kryptonite.
I think I saw it in the Superman 1. I think that's where I saw the kryptonite thing. Yeah. Oh, did you see? I like that movie.
Actually,
it was a good movie.
It's
it's
in a comic book, now that I think about it.
It's Superman comic book, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, they've kind of none of them have really heard of Superman. So it's actually, it's actually Richard Pryor. It's Gus who essentially says, oh yeah, he's from the planet Krypton. Where is this planet Krypton? It exploded.
Don't you remember it's
you
Superman 1?
You would fucking know. If you live on the planet Earth, you know, we know about Superman's story.
Forget about it.
He doesn't even exist.
They live in Metropolis. That's where Superman lives, of all the places. It's not like they're in Smallville. They're in the center of Superman.
Well, they seem to think, like, what I felt about these characters, the hubris of thinking they could kill Superman. Yeah. They just don't get it. Robert Vaughn at one point goes about Richard Pryor's character. He goes, I asked him to do one thing. Kill Superman.
Slow zoom in.
And he couldn't do it.
No one can do it.
You asked Richard Pryor to kill Superman?
Read a paper, man.
This man
you know
has
what?
No skills at doing something like that.
On your way to go to charity to drop off those socks, pick up a newspaper, read about Superman. I'm sure he's in there every day.
He is Superman. Gus is Richard Pryor.
But it's
not happening.
This actually launches sort of probably a good piece of thinking, which is, Gus, use your computer skills.
Yes.
You find some piece of kryptonite that's floating out there in the basic vicinity of where we know the Krypton was, because everybody knows.
Exactly.
And you will analyze, you'll run a chemical analysis using the weather satellite, because it also does that.
Yeah.
Of course.
And
because
computers do everything. If you hack into one computer, you hack into them all.
If you shoot a laser at something tens of millions of light years away, it can analyze the makeup of it.
Yeah.
And all of those things will probably be found on Earth, right?
Most of the makeup of it, my friend. I would say that perhaps, like, maybe just like 0.67% of this compound is unknown.
Oh, unknown.
Boy. So
now he's really confused. Like, what is this unknown?
Right.
But he doesn't want to do a job poorly.
Yeah. And so he looks at his pack of cigarettes.
Which he's smoking.
Sure.
The children's movie.
Right. And he sees tar. Right. So he just kind of, he picks up like this pen on the side of the computer and like hits the screen and erases it. And he enters tar. And this basically sort of sets forth, you know, probably the moral of the story, which is tar turns you into a huge douche.
Yes.
Yeah. Just like there's red kryptonite, unpredictable, you know, effects. There's green kryptonite, weakens Superman, but kryptonite mixed with tar
makes you douche.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like it's like the crystal meth of kryptonite.
If you give Superman this kryptonite, he basically turns into a date rapist.
But how do you give it to Superman?
Well, let's show up to a public event.
First of all, before you give it to Superman, how do you get it?
Oh, just bring it to the local lab at Webco Industries. And
then the girl brings you, a girl, you're sitting at your desk and a girl walks up with it on a tray and goes, hey, here's that compound you were asking for.
It's messengered.
And it's not like in a little thing.
It's on a lunch tray.
Yeah, it's on a lunch tray and it's like a crazy rock formation. Yep. Like, she made this. It could possibly be some.
Who knows? She's delivering it on a tray and it's a fucking sandwich.
And then Richard...
She might as well be like, here's that fucking sandwich you asked for, and instead it's kryptonite.
And then he says to her, I don't know why I'm scared of it. I'm not Superman. Like, so...
Spoiling the plan to everyone.
Yeah. Should at least be kind of a little low-key about it.
I just want to talk about this for a second. We'll come back to this. So at this point, would you think that Richard Pryor is kind of a villain audience? Do you think that he's kind of a villain at this point? Okay, good. Keep that thought, because later you might have a problem with the justification of how he's not. So they go to a public event, and now this thing, this kryptonite that looks like kryptonite but has tar in it, looks like the thing that Superman is only poorly affected by. They go to a public event, they give him kryptonite.
Disguised as a general.
Yes.
Described as like General Patton talking about
plastics.
Disguised as
a World War II general.
Richard
Pryor comes into this, it's like a Smallville is celebrating Superman.
Yes.
And they're like giving
him
the key to the city.
Little Ricky's birthday party.
Little Ricky's birthday party.
Right, because Little Ricky said he knew Superman because Superman saved him from a corn thresher. So he's like, Lana Lang was like, hey Clark, can you call up your buddy Superman? Can he come to this birthday party? He's like, all right, yeah, I'll talk to him. And Superman goes to the birthday party.
And it's a huge event. Go on, Jason.
And then a military jeep pulls up, driven by the lesbian-looking sister of Robert Vaughn's character. And Richard Pryor gets out in military garb, gets up on stage, and is a character. This is the first of Richard Pryor's character pieces in the movie.
Well, second, because the first one was the cowboy guy. The guy in the Colonel Sanders outfit.
So he screams about plastics, molded plastic seats for fat American asses, blah, blah, blah.
Superman. The president needs to sign a pen made of plastic. Like, what is going on? I'm even lost. Like, I don't know.
And it goes on for so fucking long.
Richard, keep on improvising.
Mental.
We love it. Go.
He gives Superman the kryptonite.
Which he takes. Now, meanwhile, a movie ago, he was given this same thing. And was almost killed. He takes it willingly.
Yeah.
And also,
happily.
There's been no effort whatsoever to disguise it.
Yes.
It is just sort of like, let's just present it to him as is.
It's like crazy
crystal.
Rock formation. Right.
Yes. This was the point that I wrote in my notes, I want to stop watching now.
Well, I would like to show you the first. Now, this affects him, but not right away. Not right away. It takes a second. And this is the scene.
I think you're about to show my favorite
yes,
scene.
Yes, this is the scene
movie.
That Damon, you requested, yes. And it's well worth it.
I hope it starts at the beginning because that's the best part.
It does.
Oh, yeah, it's perfect.
Okay, here we go.
Pay very careful attention to the beginning
Holy
of
shit.
To the
yes.
beginning of
this
the
is now we have no reason to think anything's weird at this point. He's just been
no,
given.
Well,
he's
we
just
know
been
that.
Given.
Yeah, exactly. Here we go.
Okay.
He's reading a photo album, or
he hasn't had an afternoon nap for years. Well, this is just the biggest day of his life. I don't know how to thank you.
Oh, you just did that wonderful lunch.
Oh. Well, I do like to cook. You'll take some coffee, won't you?
Yes, please.
Oh, decaffeinated, of course.
Right.
What? Decaffeinated? Of course.
We don't want a jittery Superman.
Oh, here goes. Hello? The kryptonite's affecting him.
What?
The kryptonite is not in this.
Really? Yeah, he's here. I'll tell him. Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Superman? That was my friend Betty. There's been an accident
ring?
On the old river bridge. A trailer truck crashed through the barrier rail. It's hanging off the side of the bridge, and the driver's still in the cab. Oh, I'm sorry. I hate to make you rush off.
Well, there's no rush. That's okay. I always get there on time. Come on, let's relax a little.
Look at him.
It's unusual finding a good-looking girl like you alone like this.
Wait, Paul, can you rewind that line for one
yes.
second? Because that's like the craziest fucking
okay.
line in the movie.
Okay, here we go. We're just rewind it. Here we go. Listen up.
Looking girl like you alone like this.
Oh.
No, it's unusual finding a good-looking girl like you alone like this.
Creepy.
You know, it's unusual to find a good-looking girl like you alone like this. I'm Superman.
Look at this. He plays this really
Listen,
well.
Are you sure you shouldn't do something about the bridge?
What bridge? You're right. I have to get going.
I'll come read
Take
you
the
later.
Door.
Now, Jason, you have a wow. point that bears repeating. There's no kryptonite here. He didn't bring that kryptonite
no.
with him.
No.
There,
he just is magically altered by a music cue.
You never see that kryptonite again in the movie, but
no.
yet he is affected.
It was a prop that was on loan that somebody took back. No, it makes no sense. Like, he's just sitting there looking at a photo album and then looks dark. Oh. The music cue tells you something's wrong. And then he is a stone-cold rapist.
And the scenes continue with him. Like, now he's like bad Superman. He's not saving people anymore. And it comes to the scene where he flies to the top of the Statue of Liberty where the hot girl has somehow gotten herself on the crown of the Statue of Liberty. It's unclear if she's threatening to jump or not. And
I think it is important to make the distinction while we're still on this scene that had that truck not driven off that bridge, Lana Lang would definitely be either dead or raped.
Oh,
or
yes.
Both. Like,
yeah.
That's a good point.
That's like, it's the greatest excuse ever yeah. that a woman has had to basically rebuff in advance.
Yeah.
Which is like, shouldn't you go do something about the truck that is about to go over the bridge? And
oh,
the
yeah.
scene that follows it yeah. is Superman arrives, the truck is literally going over the bridge. It's falling, and he arrives.
He lands right next to the
guy. He still reports to the man in charge.
What's going on here? How can I help?
Is there anything I could do? And the guy goes, wish you had gotten here 5 minutes ago. I think I got to give him a little bit of attitude.
Yeah, he was mad.
Yeah.
But fuck you, Superman.
You couldn't come to this small town truck overturn?
This is the point where I feel like the movie does have an inherent logic to it, because the note after I wrote, I want to stop watching now, was, hang on, Superman is a rapist. I'm back on board for this movie.
And okay, now, wait a minute. Let's just follow this logic.
Yeah.
So, you're feeling a little bit evil. You're yeah. no longer sort of burdened by
yes.
this whole gotta tell the truth, can't rape women sort of...
Well, wait. You're so evil. You're almost
yeah.
gonna rape.
You always, yeah, you always
rape.
Are
gonna... So what else would you do?
So you go, what's the other thing I always wanted to do?
Yeah.
Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Okay.
I'm gonna fucking straighten that shit out.
He straightens out the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Which, by the way, isn't really evil.
Yeah, it's not sort evil of, at all.
Yeah, it's like kind of nice.
I'm gonna fuck it straight.
Neither is the guy who's lighting the marathon torch.
The Olympic torch. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just hanging out at the Olympics, blowing out the flame like.
He up in the scaffolding. The guy's like, what the?
He becomes a dick. He's not evil. He's just a dick.
He's just a dick.
He's just an asshole.
If this was now, Superman would put on an Ed Hardy shirt.
Yeah. Yes.
That would be the...
He's an asshole.
The difference. Yeah. So he's called to the top of the Statue of Liberty. This is where he has his second encounter, where he puts his super tights and penis in front of this girl's face.
Oh, it's Robert Vaughn's hot blonde, like, yes, busty girlfriend who
when I saw this movie as a kid, I thought was gorgeous.
By the way, on a more serious note, I haven't seen the first Superman in quite some time, but Statue of Liberty exists in Metropolis.
Yes,
it does.
They've
got their own.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't get hung up on that.
Yeah,
just asking.
Don't stop looking for this logic.
Yeah. The Twin Towers are also in Metropolis, too, because then they fly around. Yeah, so there's a couple of New York
City landmarks. You're the Leaning Tower
Fusion. You were talking about evaporation. I can talk about the Statue of Liberty.
So basically, she promises him sexual favors if Superman gets this boat in the middle of the water. And which brings me to my second scene, which I wrote down, let this be known as the movie where Superman fucks.
Wait a minute. Before he fucks, though, when he goes to the boat in the middle of the ocean?
Yes.
See, I felt like this whole scene, this whole sequence is, she gets him all riled up on the top of the Statue of Liberty, and he's all fucking turned on and shit.
Oh.
She's like, there's a boat in the middle of the ocean. He flies to the boat. He fucking punches a hole in the side of the boat, and oil fucking comes all over the ocean. Like, this is just
metaphor.
A sexual, like, release for Superman. He's like, and it's like, and I feel like that is the whole thing. Just comes black jizz into the ocean is what I wrote. That's what I write when I watch movies. Want to watch movies with me, ladies?
So basically she says, if you punch a hole in this oil tanker, you can sleep with me. And now... enjoy this scene. These scenes are so worth it.
He comes to collect.
Hi.
I love that outfit.
She has like those 1980s breast implants that look like rocks in her chest.
How about a little après-ski?
Man is slightly dirtier as he listens.
Champagne?
Oh, no champagne.
Oh. What are you talking about?
Grabs her by the back of the head.
And wants her like stone cold sober for this.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, wow, wow.
I mean, you guys fucking sit with that for a second.
I mean...
this is a children's movie.
This movie is for children. And Superman does this woman's bidding in order to bone her. How do you explain that to your kid? What's now, happening?
Superman's having a bad day. Now, Richard Pryor on the other side of the movie... he's having success. He now went from his regular yo-yo to a Gucci yo-yo.
Was it Gucci or was it
Louis Vuitton?
Louis Vuitton
yo-yo. And now he is... And we know he's successful because he's in a suit and he's been writing down his ideas for a supercomputer on napkins and old ketchup packets. And he passes it to Robert Vaughn. He's like, build me this. That's my supercomputer. It's like a children's drawing. It's nothing. Yeah. They go, ooh, this is the biggest computer in the world. There's no schematics. It's just like a box that he drew like some lines in. He's like, a computer.
And then what they build from those scraps is like an impossible machine. You know what I mean?
That
like,
is the most advanced computer in the world. There's no other schematics besides these napkins. How do we know this? When we see the guys building it, they're looking at the napkins.
Yep. They haven't transferred it.
Wait, have we gotten to
And it's important, though, I think, in terms of tracking sort of Paul's interior motivation for Richard Pryor. At this point, he's asked exactly, what will this computer do?
Yeah.
What is its purpose when we turn it on? And I think he does say, well, it will anticipate any attack, and it will defend itself by basically figuring out its attacker, and we will be able to do anything that we want with this thing. You can use it for whatever you want. We're essentially going to control the world.
Right.
So that is the sole purpose of this computer to exist. There is no philanthropic purpose whatsoever.
No, it is a purely evil machine.
Yeah. Right.
There was no like, oh, and it will also help people from starving. There was never a mention of that. It was
Which
only for power.
Which backs up the idea that Richard Pryor is evil. Yeah.
Straight up a criminal mastermind. But no. So they bring Superman. I mean, we're skipping over the Superman fight scene.
Wait, are we going to really skip over Clark Kent Fight Club Junkyard Dog scene?
Yeah, we should talk about this.
I mean, like, this shit, like, this is when I feel like everybody associated with this movie was like, do you just want to, like, do mushrooms and write a scene for this movie?
Basically, this scene is, like, right out of Requiem for a Dream.
No, it's Fight Club. It is Fight Club.
Superman, drunk from being in a bar, gets this massive headache, and out of his headache comes Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And they're in a junkyard, and they have a fight, but it's not clear.
They fight viciously.
Like, yeah.
For a kid's movie.
They're dropping, like, anvils on each other's head, which doesn't sound vicious, but it looks vicious.
You know, he puts them in a car crusher.
Yeah, but sometimes they just throw tires at each other.
I was like, why? Clark Kent is like, woo,
I love that Superman didn't just step out of the first
No, tire. Superman kind of got him. He stood in the tires, and then was like, and when the last one got there, he was like, poof, just broke out of him.
Basically, like, they fight to the death.
Yes.
As Clark Kent strangles evil Superman, like in a way that I was like, if a child was watching this, they'd be like, why are you killing Superman?
And because Clark Kent is killing Superman, even though he's evil, it's like straight up Jack and Jill, but action.
Jack and Jill, the Adam Sandler movie. We got to do that movie.
So he chokes out Superman. Superman disappears. Now Superman is better again.
Yeah, he's now
no reason why he had that. No reason. No reason.
Never referenced.
There was a reason. End of Act 2.
What was the what?
End of Act 2.
Oh, that was it.
It's basically like, you know what? We got to sort this out.
Yeah, we got to get him back to being good now.
This is what writers refer to as an and-then screenplay. You know? You're basically like, and then he's in the bar, and he's like really pissed, and he's like flinging peanuts, and then like Clark comes out of him, and they fight each other.
Yeah.
And then the supercomputer is done, and like, what's great is, so now he's Clark again. He's retained his soul, and the first thing that he does is he flies back to the chalet.
Yes.
Why?
To find the girl that he had sex with. Like, oh, I think she was evil.
Well, keep that in mind.
Because
that's weird.
Keep that in mind. Why does he go back to the chalet? But when he goes back to the chalet, there is a video waiting for him, sort of playing on a loop, because, you know, and it's basically like, hey, we thought that you might have turned good again, and if that happened to happen, we anticipated it. Yeah. And if you're looking for us, come here to this
to the
sort
Grand
of a,
Canyon.
Abandoned canyon. And by the way, not a trap. Not a trap.
Superman is so gullible in this movie. Now, this whole movie, by the way, could have taken place over 8 months or 5 days. I mean, there is really
no time. Or five minutes.
Yeah, there is really.
Yes.
He gets down to the canyon. The computer is built. They're all in there.
Oh man, we're skipping over balloon chairs. We're skipping over
donkeys.
Everything.
We're running out of time. But go. Oh, we can talk. Yeah.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. So he gets down to the computer, which I mean, balloon chairs and donkeys. That's the least that we have to worry about.
The least of our concerns.
They decide, well, we're gonna kill Superman by firing some rockets at him.
Sure.
Again, no research on this guy. He is unkillable.
Yeah.
He is Superman. He often catches rockets with his bare hands and breaks them. This is not in the first movie, he spun it around. But in reverse time, rockets aren't going to hurt him.
What's great about this is, in the midst of firing rockets at Superman, Gus, Richard Pryor, who was taking a donkey down because he doesn't want to fly by balloon, sort of comes
because
in and he goes...
to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, balloon chairs.
Hey, what are you guys doing with my computer?
Yeah,
and they're like, there are missiles. What were we supposed to do with the missiles?
We're trying to kill Superman.
We're trying to kill Superman. Isn't that what it's for?
And then he's like, no!
not for that.
Yeah, he's really upset that they're using this computer for badness.
Doesn't say what he wanted to use it for.
No. He's never even talked about creating a computer with missiles and nuclear missiles.
What we're forgetting, to me, the part where this truly became super crazo bonkers was Robert Vaughn has the joystick for the missiles, and he's like shooting them at Superman, and on the screen is basically a video game.
Like an Atari, video
like
game.
Like an 8-bit or whatever, like an Atari, yes, like a Pitfall. Or like it's Missile
at,
Command.
It's at least ColecoVision quality.
It's ColecoVision,
they
you're right.
The bank.
And they're shooting, and every time a missile hits Superman or Superman defeats a missile, it scores flash up.
Yes.
100.
And like Robert
Vaughn
is like trying
game.
To, yeah, he can't play a video game. He's like, oh, steady your thumbs. You know, it's like, it's not, he's, yeah.
The
score is
like,
running.
Wait, what?
Clearly it was a tie-in for a game that never existed.
Score!
That computer, Richard Pryor just created a very advanced video game machine. He created like
that's
the Neo Geo of 1980s.
That's what he wanted
that's
to use
it
was
for.
3DO, yeah.
And then basically Superman now, he survives the missile phalanx.
Yes.
He enters and
comes in.
And his comely friend basically says, "Hey, honey." And he looks at her and he goes, "I don't know you. We've never met."
Meanwhile, like you said, he, 2 minutes ago, he just flew to the ski chalet.
He rolled to the chalet. So he's basically
going
to he's going to pretend that the entire time he was Dark Superman.
This doesn't is have sort any of like, memory.
Yeah, it's the ultimate bender.
But
yeah.
But also, even
that's not
when
how
he,
you treat a woman, by the
no,
way.
But also,
no,
when
it's
he
not.
He becomes uh-huh. good again. He becomes good and goes back to the ski chalet. So he was there when he was evil. He was there when he was good, and he still has no memory.
And
of it.
No, he does have a memory. He's ignoring her. He's basically being like, "Didn't happen, babe. Didn't
Whoa.
Happen.
Whoa, Jason.
Don't remember you.
What you
totally remembers.
What you
that's what we think
now,
of women.
Now, yes. At this point,
I've said too much.
The computer figures out. Here's salvo one on Superman is I'm going to encase him in some sort of bubble because let's see how long he can do without air.
Without
forget
air.
About the fact that he flies around in space regularly.
All the time. He's
often.
In space.
I mean,
all the time.
Loves space.
How
loves
long space. Can he last without air?
Yeah.
Forever.
Why? Again. Do a modicum of research.
Yeah. They did read an interview, you guys. They read an interview.
Understand that he's an alien that flies in space before you knock off his air supply. In a weird, like, kind of, like, bubble. It's
like a
cobweb bubble.
It was like an embryo.
So
when the bubble doesn't work, the computer goes to plan B. Kryptonite.
Which should have been plan A.
Right, sure. It's like, all right, well, I could have impressed my friends if the bubble worked, but fuck it, kryptonite.
The plan, you know,
I'll do the easy one.
If you're fighting Superman, the plan is kryptonite.
Right.
Don't bother with bubbles. Don't bother with missiles. You have kryptonite? By the way, they
start
have kryptonite now.
Start with the kryptonite. That
they
would be
have
the one
it.
To start with.
Is it a kryptonite bubble? No.
Were they kryptonite missiles? No. Waste of time.
So the kryptonite is working, and
yes.
Gus suddenly realizes, good God, I designed a computer that shoots kryptonite rays.
Again.
Maybe they're going to use it to hurt Superman. How do I dismantle this thing? Oh, wait a second.
First it's goes, Superman, wait, it's not me. I'm not with these guys. You're 100% with these guys.
Right. You've been with these guys the whole movie.
This whole thing was your idea. They just funded it.
Without you, this would not be happening. Anyway, he's not with them. So, yeah, he goes
and
down.
Superman, by the way, never says, hey, wait a minute. You were the general who handed me that rock. Like, I know it was a good disguise, but now that the helmet's off... But so Richard Pryor at this point, this is the real genius of his character, which is he anticipated that this device might be used or might need to be shut down. And if you're a computer genius, what do you build into your plan to make sure that if the computer gets out of control, how are you going to shut it down? You install a fire axe.
Yeah.
You make sure.
First you install a screw.
Oh, right. Sure.
Right.
Yes.
First you install
a screw.
I'm sorry, I skipped the screw.
There's a screw.
One screw
that when
keep
removed.
Keep in mind, if you have not seen this movie, if you can remember the Doc Brown flux capacitor, how simple that drawing was in Back to the Future, this thing that he drew was simpler than that, yet it has all of these things. I just want to go back to how simple his drawing was.
He takes a screwdriver. He unscrews the screw. The whole thing shuts down.
Immediately.
Computer is
one screw,
done.
That Robert Vaughn's like, give me back that screw. And he's like, go. He swallows the screw. Sorry. Then the machine comes back to life.
Right, yes, sorry.
At which point Damon, sorry.
I skipped over that part, yes. And so now it becomes...
sentient.
You know, this is sort of like, you know, I'm sure an early version of Skynet, if you
yes.
will. It's now become sentient. It's been turned off. It's now turning against them.
And it's going to make everybody into computers, essentially?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm the right person to talk about this, because you're obsessed with Robot Sister. I think that you should, well, you know, you should give her due.
Okay, so the machine... takes over, right? It starts sucking power off the power grid. All of the cities of the world basically lose power and are plunged into darkness. Chaos reigns. Superman is still being hit with the ray. They manage to defeat that. And then they're escaping, and the machine grabs the sister, sucks her in, and turns her into a robot.
Turns her into a full-on robot.
Literally.
Very quickly.
And metal attached to her face, and she becomes a I-beam ray shooting fucking robot.
Like walking like
bam, 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 bam.
Bam, 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 bam. This is a living, breathing human for every moment of this movie, and immediately is a robot.
Yeah.
Tries to do it to Superman.
Yeah, she shoots the girlfriend, and but the robot, by the way, is not fatal. She shoots rays that just hold people in place.
Yeah, they're kind of like magnet rays that make people just stuck into walls. Like, hey, I can't get down.
But so in order to
which
defeat
can get
this,
really annoying after a while.
In order to defeat this super machine, guys, Superman, a near omnipotent being.
Yes.
What's he gonna do to defeat this machine?
Let's think about what we know. Well, we visited that chemical plant earlier in the movie.
At the time, I thought that scene had nothing to do with anything. But
acid, didn't that acid, they could melt through anything, right?
Right.
But you'd have to have a lot of that acid, right?
No. Maybe like one small canister.
One small canister of acid?
But wait a second. Yeah. How would you get it in without anyone knowing?
Right, well, but yeah. Wait a minute. Could you hide it behind your back and under your cape?
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're saying if you're Superman and you need to trick a sentient computer, you can just walk in with a vial of acid behind your back?
Yeah, well, because the computer will x-ray you and just see that the acid's not going to really do anything bad. Because the computer doesn't know when the acid gets hot. That's when it's really dangerous.
Right. And the computer also lacks the ability to say, Superman's holding something behind his fucking back.
Let's give that another once over.
Right, exactly.
By the way, the computer...
It doesn't seem dangerous, but I'm dubious.
Yeah, the computer is winning. It's a dumb computer, and it's winning against Superman.
Doing everything wrong.
Yeah.
This computer is doing all the wrong things and still winning. Anyway, the acid gets hot. It falls through the ground and immediately eats the entire computer.
Yeah. It bubbles up and splurts.
Oh, yeah.
Splurts on the computer, and it's like... Zzz, 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 zzz.
It looks like the goop from You Can't Do That on Television, but red.
It's like plop, Superman.
Plop,
it's
plop,
like
plop,
Superman
plop.
Was like, I don't know.
It farts it out. The computer's defeated. The next scene you see, Richard Pryor and Superman are just flying together. And Richard Pryor's like, hey, what are you going to do with those guys? Oh, we'll take care of them. I'm gonna bring you back to Metropolis. You're a good dude.
First, let's stop at a coal mine.
Yes.
Where I will give you a job recommendation. Do you guys have any computers here? And they're like, well, the boss has got a tiny little computer upstairs. He's like, well, you do know better than to hire my friend Gus here to work that computer. What?
And then Superman makes a diamond for Lana Lang, takes off, and then Gus Gorman looks around and he's like, you know what? I don't want to work at a coal plant. I'm out. And he's like, oh, okay. Like, he's already better than the coal plant. He's going to walk to the bus station.
He's learned nothing.
He's learned nothing.
But what we do learn, he's like, well, where's the nearest bus station? And they're like, 9, 10 miles that way. And he's like, okay. Like, there's so much more information that gets communicated at a point where I'm like, who fucking cares? Why are we still here?
Now, finally, you go home. You know, Superman has had this budding relationship with Lana Lang. It looks like they're gonna, you know, he's gonna give her this diamond ring. Things are going good.
There's a brief montage, though, of just sort of before the very end of the movie, which I don't want to spoil, but putting things back, you know, particularly the oil freighter, which is, you know, as you said, maybe 5 minutes has gone by, maybe 2 weeks, but the freighter is exactly where Superman left.
Yeah, right there.
All the
oil has just come out just a little bit.
And so he basically does what anybody would do. He blows the oil back in terms of the sexual metaphor, back in. And then, what's the smartest way to seal an oil tanker?
Oh, this is easy. You probably use your heat vision, right?
Because
the oil's not volatile in that way. Yeah.
Nothing flammable.
Yeah,
as you were, gentlemen. Thanks, Superman, for fucking punching a hole in our tanker.
And almost lighting us into a human bomb. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Then we get to Lana.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So he gets to Lana. Everything's going to work out great for Superman, but guess what? Brad shows up.
What?
Brad comes to Metropolis.
Lana and her son are basically staying in a homeless shelter.
Yes.
At this point. Inexplicably, they're staying in like a hotel that looks like a gross, weird place.
Right. And she's got a date, she thinks, with Superman when Clark shows up.
He's like,
and he's basically like, look, Superman's not going to be able to make it. I hope I can step in. And she's like, great, you'll do. I'll just leave Ricky alone in the homeless shelter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God Brad shows up.
Shows up. A couple of funny coincidences. All of a sudden he's on a dinner cart and he's in an elevator and he's gone for, I guess, forever. Or until the elevator stops and he goes back upstairs. There is no definitive end to Brad. He has shown his persistence. He is going to do something horrible to Lana. Again, another date rapist in this movie. Superman.
Go ahead.
I was like, there's one thing that he has to really fix, though. The one thing, his greatest mistake.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Why is something really bothering me? This movie can't end quite yet. I will not be able to sleep at night. What is nagging me?
Well, you know, he did a lot of bad things when he was a bad Superman. We all know
that. He fucked that girl.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I think the worst thing he did was, he straightened out the Tower of Pisa. You've got to rectify that.
Now here's the good thing. In the 5 minutes that the movie has elapsed, somehow the souvenir shop has basically
thrown away all the Leaning Tower pieces.
That's yesterday's news.
They've
just gotten their fresh shipment of straight power Tower pieces.
And now it's crooked again. The guy's like, oh, mamma mia.
That's the last shot of the movie.
That's how the movie
ends.
Mamma
mia.
The movie begins without Superman and ends without Superman.
We end on the worst green screen Italy you'd ever see. That is the movie in a nutshell. Now, obviously, we have our strong opinion, but there are some people online who think a little bit highly of it. So now it's time for a second opinion.
Second opinion.
This is a 5-star review from Amazon. This is the only Superman sequel I will own or ever own. Because it's fresh and adventurous with a touch of downright hilarity. There's two here that I can't go over. All right, how about this? I love this movie. In fact, I don't like the first two. They're pompous, overblown, and take themselves too seriously. Marlon Brando, come on. What are you, trying to be the Godfather? It's Superman. 5-star review. This by far the most disturbing one. By Mr. Cleft. When one dies, I mean really dies, what does he carry from this life into the next? Not one's material objects, they are fleeting.
Where are we going?
One's memories? One's memories, I hope so, because if I can't bring my film prints and I can't bring my memories, then how will I bring Superman 3 to the afterworld?
Wow.
Wow! Wow!
Thank you, Mr. Cleft.
I researched that guy. That was not a bit. I thought, oh, this is a guy doing a bit. It's not a bit. Hey, everybody. Don't mean to interrupt, but this is Paul back in the studio. I hope you are enjoying our live show. We actually had too much of a show to make one episode. We are making another episode for you. That's right. You're getting a bonus episode. When? Next week. But, Paul, I thought you already talked all you can about Superman 3. We did. But we have a very special guest. That's right. Next week, we will be interviewing Jack O'Halloran, who played Non in Superman 1 and 2. That's right, the big, tall, badass Kryptonian bad guy who didn't speak, who was right there next to Zod and Ursa. He was on our show. We talked to him. I'm going to tell you one thing that you are definitely in store for. A lot of neck grabs. Jack O'Halloran is a like awesomely intimidating guy, and he is going to tell you a story about the time he grabbed Christopher Reeve by the neck, not while shooting, off screen. So that gets you excited. I hope it does, because it got me excited. Tune in next week. You'll hear our whole Jack O'Halloran interview. And I will tell you that his book, Jack O'Halloran's book, Family Legacy, is in stores right now. You can check that out. And check us out on earwolf.com. We always have great stuff there, especially our Nick Cage t-shirts, Ridiculous Cage t-shirts. They're almost gone, people. Make sure you buy them. And now, we're coming to our audience game. That's right. You send in your suggestions for a better tagline of Superman 3. And here they are in a segment we like to call...
You've got mail, baby. Yeah.
That's right. We asked you to come up with a better tagline for Superman 3. Because the one in the trailer is simply, this time will be the best time. Probably the worst tagline of all time. Michael Kaczynski wrote in, Superman 3. These villains have prior convictions. Spelt like Richard Pryor. Maybe it's better written. I don't know. I like it. Michael, you did a good job. Bryce Sullivan writes in, Superman 3. This time will be the second to last time. Kyle Brown wrote in, Superman 3. This one won't be as bad as the next one. So true. Quest for peace. Painful. And Flem O'Neill writes, this time you'll believe a man can't fly. All great suggestions. Thanks so much for playing. And just a reminder, if you're in the LA area, I'm going to be doing a live Christmas show at Largo for charity. That's right. It's largola.com. Check me out. Give all the money to charity in the holiday season. And make sure you tune in next week to hear the continuation of this episode and our epic interview with Jack O'Halloran, who talks about everything from King Kong to Superman to Christopher Reeve and his book about his father, who they based the movie The Godfather on. That's right. Jack is connected. And if he doesn't like the comments that you write about him on the next episode, he'll find you and neck choke you. That also reminds me, go and rate and review us on iTunes. If you like the show, please rate and review us. It helps. I don't know why it helps, but apparently it does. So please do that. Thank you so much. See you next week.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.